own life.
Do we sound crisper? Better?
I can't tell.
I don't know. But
I don't.
We Are had you? A... No, you. No.
Okay, just say what you were going to say.
Well, I was going to say we had a professional sound person
yes.
look at our rig for yes. other reasons.
Yes.
And we've been talking into the microphones wrong for nearly 5 years.
I've been doing it really well.
No, we've been both doing it the wrong way.
I think I've overcome the obstacles of the wrongness to deliver a smooth product.
You have so many
that
obstacles.
Everyone's ears are happy about.
That you are overcoming. But this is not one of them. We've been doing it wrong. We've been facing the microphones the wrong way.
Backwards.
Yes.
We've been coming at it backwards.
So our apologies for all that.
Well, but, I mean, seriously, unless you're a sound engineer
no,
or an audiophile, do you really know or care?
We did. It was pointed out that we've been low, so we're trying to be higher.
Yeah, apparently our levels have been low the past couple of weeks. Are you taking care of that problem right now?
I am. I'm looking.
Are you
going
to keep a mindful watch on the board?
I am,
because you need to do that.
Yes,
because if you don't do that, everything's going to be ruined.
I'm getting us.
Apparently, the last episodes have been ruined because of you.
I'm getting us closer to the red without going over. It's very Price is Right.
Is the red bad, or is the red normal? Like, is the, sometimes being in the red
can,
what you're supposed
you
to do?
You can dip in the red, and it's not the end of the world.
Right.
You don't want to live in the red.
Oh, all right.
And you don't want to live in Britannia either.
I was never skinny enough to live in Britannia.
Me neither.
And furthermore, I thought Britannia was a cheap knockoff product.
They were Ugly.
They were
not good jeans.
They were not Calvin Klein jeans. They were not Gloria Vanderbilt.
They weren't
jeans.
Even Jordache.
They weren't. Yeah, no, it's true. They weren't. Yes.
Yeah. Britannia was the American Eagle of designer jeans.
Right. But Britannia was like Bugle Boy.
How so?
Like dumb and bad, and the kind you got at like Miller's Outpost.
Yes, yes, you know? So that's the criteria. Yeah. This is not a podcast about jeans, however. This is a podcast of the cinema.
Linoleum Knife is the name, and it yes, that's what it is, a podcast of the cinema. Who are you?
I'm Alonzo
What's
Duralde.
Your deal?
I'm Alonzo Duralde, film reviews editor of The Wrap and film critic for What the Flick on the YouTube network The Young Turks. And you're Dave White.
How come you got to say your own name? But I don't get to... Where's my agency?
Because
you're oppressing me.
I'm trying to bring up the fact that you are a free agent.
You're being oppressive to me right now. That I need to have my own voice.
That you belong to nothing and no one.
That is incorrect. See, here's the thing. You're telling... Let me tell my story.
All right.
That's... You just... In the words of the internet, take a seat.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Helen Reddy. I'm sorry if I'm mansplaining you. Go on, then.
My name is Dave White. I'm a film critic. There.
Wow. Thanks for bringing more dead air, which you usually only do in the middle of a sentence. Now you found new places to have big gaps of nothing in this
program. I
don't
think of it as dead air. I think of it as...
A Pinterian pause?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meaningful pauses.
It's dead air.
No, it's not. Okay, so here's what's up if you weren't listening last week to the last episode. Or maybe you haven't been on Facebook this week hanging on my every word.
Or maybe you couldn't hear us last week because we were so low.
Yeah. I quit.
Movies.com.
I quit Movies.com. Movies.com was my employer from 2005, October of 2005, until... today. Well, I put in my notice 2 weeks ago.
Right. You said you'd be there through the end of the month.
So I'd be there through the end of the month. And technically, my last day should have been Friday.
Right.
But now I don't know what's going to happen because they haven't posted my reviews of Aloha or San Andreas.
Mm-hmm.
I can laugh about this because this has been an occurrence that has taken place over the past year and a half or
but,
so.
But you're looking for closure.
I would like those reviews to post. Here's the best part. This is the capper of this experience. On Thursday, I went to the site, and they had already taken me down off the front page. Like, the minute I was like, this is going to happen on the end of the week. They were like, ooh, can't wait. Like, it was
all but scaffolding with people painting over your face.
If you click on the word reviews
right
on the front page, you can still go to the column that holds all my reviews.
Right.
Like, I'm still there. But those two reviews have not been added to it. Mm-hmm. Nor, if you type in the titles into search, will the reviews show up.
Are there pages for those movies?
My editor, I don't know. I never know. My editor processed the reviews through the WordPress account.
Okay.
That part.
This much you know.
I always see that. Like, I see when he moves it from draft to published.
Right.
And then the mysterious thing happens, and sometimes it shows up on time, and sometimes it doesn't show up on time, and sometimes it shows up never. My review of Unfriended never ran. And
people have already forgotten that movie ever existed.
Yeah. So anyway, maybe those reviews are going to show up on movies.com, those final two reviews.
Right.
Maybe they won't. Here's the story, though, for anyone who gives a heck. I'm going to put them on linoleum-knife.com
sure.
Monday morning if they are not up on movies.com. Because
the world needs to know.
Because whatever, who cares? I just think it's really funny, you know, that before the reviews were even to be posted,
yes.
They're like, get rid of him. he is stricken
everything,
from the record.
Everything from your dressing room was out on the sidewalk.
I assume the archive of my reviews will still stay up on the site.
I would
because
hope.
I know, like, if you go to the site, you can still see the reviews that Gray Drake wrote.
Sure.
You can still see the reviews that Jen Yamato wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll probably stay in the archive for a while.
Yeah.
Until someone is like, who was he again?
Like, we need the space.
Yeah. So yeah, whatever. Who cares? This is what's going on in my life. I am now the film critic for linoleum-knife.com. Woo! Here's the other funny thing. I posted about this on Facebook earlier this week, and no fewer than like a dozen people came to me saying, oh, but what am I going to do about your reviews? Even though I said in the post, I'm going to be writing reviews for linoleum-knife.com. I will be writing about film for linoleum-knife.com. In addition to this podcast, I will be writing reviews for linoleum-knife.com. And people are like, what am I going to do? I love your reviews. This makes me sad. And each person, I was like, I will be writing reviews for linoleum-knife.com.
Reading comprehension is alive and well.
And so, now, that may be a review of a currently released film.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a review of something I've seen in repertory.
Sure.
It may be a review of a Blu-ray sitting on top of Mount Unwatched, which exists in our home.
True.
It's going to be anything I damn well please to write about.
Yes.
For linoleum-knife.com.
Yes.
I have absolute freedom to do whatever that H-E double toothpicks I want. That's what's going
to
happen.
For the good of this program, I would hope that you would attempt to keep abreast of the major releases.
Well, of course I will.
Even though you are not going to see Entourage.
You ruined the surprise.
I'm very upset about
this. I was
going to
surprise everybody by not seeing Entourage.
I'm very upset
now
about
you've wrecked
having,
my surprise.
Having no one to talk about Entourage.
No. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah, but I know. But it'll be handball, you know, and you're going to be the wall.
I believe I'm a very sturdy wall.
Well.
And that I can provide a lot of wall characteristics and qualities to enhance your discussion.
It'll be a good test of your yes and skills.
I'm going to do a lot of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
And see, I just did that.
Fine. I can live with that, I guess.
But you did ruin the surprise.
Well, sorry. That's what I live for. Golly. Not a lot of movies this week.
Two of them.
Three.
Two of them that I've seen.
Correct.
One of them is the other. What was the other one?
Gemma Bovary.
Okay. Starring Gemma
Arterton. Yes. That's why when I posted it on my Facebook wall, I said, Gemma is Gemma in Gemma Bovary.
Yeah. Okay. What we should first discuss is Aloha.
Whew.
That is, yes.
Oh, man. Okay. I guess we must.
We do.
Oof.
Okay. It's bad.
Yes.
It is the latest film from Cameron Crowe. Ah, I just lost my thing. Sorry.
Who is on the opposite of a roll.
He's on a backward roll.
He's on an unroll.
he's on an unravel, I think is what he's on.
Maybe.
There used to be a thing that Cameron Crowe did that made me happy. It was making me care about sort of average young white dudes who had minimal charisma or none.
Well, okay.
And but he was so empathetic toward those guys.
Right.
That he made you kind of root for them. Like, honestly, the kid in Almost Famous
is a bit of a blank, I grant you.
He's not much. And what's his face and Say Anything?
John Cusack?
Lloyd
Dobler. Lloyd Dobler.
He was whatever.
Kickboxes.
Yeah, he kicked.
I would put in that category Campbell Scott in Singles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a movie I still kind of like.
And did you want to be friends with Jerry Maguire?
Oh, God, no.
No. See, so that's what I'm talking about. Like, he could take these dudes.
Yeah.
That were
insufferable in their own way.
Minimally likable.
The average white band.
And kind of make you kind of be into hoping they would turn out all right.
Mm-hmm.
And then along came just Vanilla Sky, and We Bought a Zoo, and
don't forget Elizabethtown.
Elizabethtown, which is a disaster.
Oh, the worst.
And
maybe even worse than Aloha.
I believe it still that it is worse than Aloha, because yeah. It takes forever and nothing happens.
Yeah.
At least there's the mystery of what you think might be supposed to be happening in
Aloha.
Did that sentence even make sense?
Enough, yes.
You wonder what's supposed to be happening in Aloha, even if you can't quite figure it out, and even if the movie can't quite figure it out. So, Bradley Cooper is a
insufferable white guy.
Defense contractor.
Everyone's
favorite kind of person.
I guess that's how you describe it.
And he's brokering a deal with a billionaire, played by Bill Murray,
mm-hmm.
to send Bill Murray's rocket into space.
Which for some reason involves building a pedestrian gate on an Air Force base over some sacred Hawaiian burial ground.
Is it a burial ground?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's never very well explained.
All we know is that he ends up having to meet with the king of the sovereign nation of Hawaii.
Yes.
Which is a real thing.
And the real guy.
The real king plays himself in the movie.
Yeah.
These folks are anti-state separatists.
Yeah.
Who
are protesting U.S. dominion.
U.S. dominion and statehood.
Yeah.
And they have t-shirts. One of the king wears a t-shirt that says, Hawaiian by birth, American by force.
Yeah.
And this took place in the late 19th century and then continued up until the 50s.
Well, the original missionary showed up.
Yeah. And ruined everything.
Right.
The way missionaries did.
Yes. If you see the movie version of James Missioner's Hawaii,
the missionaries are probably the heroes of the film.
Oh no 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 oh, no not? No! It's all
I've
about
never
how,
seen the movie.
No, it's about how the missionaries ruined everything. yeah, it's yeah. No, the sympathy of the film is definitely with the natives.
In fact, well, I'll get to this after I explain the plot. So, okay, he arrives and he's being babysat by Emma Stone, who plays a fighter pilot, and her last name is Eng.
And she is supposed to be half API. Like, she's a quarter Chinese and a quarter Hawaiian.
And a quarter Swedish, and they don't say what the other quarter is.
I think they might, but it whizzed by really quickly. Yeah. But, yeah.
The Swedish genes, obviously, were the dominant
and
ones.
I think the other
this,
the other quarter is chalk.
Chalk or cheese.
Or milk.
Yeah. And,
liquid paper.
So... Yeah, I here's what I think. There's been a lot of discussion about this. Her character alleged her
racial makeup.
Her character's alleged Asian-ness.
Yeah,
I think that this was Crow's. You know, don't judge things by their appearances because you don't know what you're gonna get. You know,
for sure. Yeah,
because she is her character is presented as. You know, devoutly Hawaiian and proud to be, you know, half Asian. And, and although, if you really were going to cast someone who was half Asian, you would cast Olivia Munn.
Right.
Or perhaps our delightful actor friend, Aaron Quill.
Mm.
You would do that. She's half Asian and half Australian.
That's right.
Yeah. And the thing about this is that in spite of whatever Crow's intentions were, it comes off like another
blind,
insulting casting choice. Yeah.
Tone-deaf casting.
Not Emma Stone's fault, but, you know, still.
What were they all thinking?
What was anyone thinking?
Right.
So, there's that. Bradley Cooper is still in love with his ex, played by Rachel McAdams. She's still in love with him. But although she's married to the stoic and nearly silent John Krasinski.
Right.
So they've got a four-person love box going on.
A love rhombus.
That, because of course Emma Stone and Bradley Cooper wind up, you know, humping.
Yeah.
And so there's that. And then there's also the deal brokering thing. And then there's also this minor... Havsy's sort of commentary on corporate domination of the military.
Right. There's a weird subplot that doesn't quite get anywhere regarding Rachel McAdams' son, who's a very sort of weak-tea, Jonathan Lipnicki, nerdy type who runs around videotaping everything and keeps talking about the return and like...
The Hawaiian arrival
myth. The arrival myth and you know, how it ties into... The goddess of fire, Pele.
And how it ties into Bradley Cooper because his actions are meant to be mirrored by all this discussion of the ancient Hawaiian myths.
Right.
Which maybe it's supposed to be ironic because, you know, he's such a bad person.
Well, he does. His act of redemption does involve a thing that is happening far up in the sky.
Yes.
In a scene that makes no sense.
They all talk about the sky a lot.
Yeah.
But you don't. But no one ever explains these Hawaiian myths to the uninitiated.
No.
So you're just supposed to piece it together bit by bit. And in a more.
Or just think of it as kind of quaintly, quote unquote, spiritual.
Yeah. In a less messy movie. You being forced to connect the dots
is a good thing.
Is a good thing, but here it just feels like entire chunks have been removed.
Yeah, there's all the dots are lying there waiting to be connected because the relationships don't make sense, the characters don't make sense, the dialogue is phony when it's trying to just sort of be stylized. This thing's a mess.
It's a disaster. Yeah. It means well.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And it's not hateful, Although I will say again,
it was making me angry because it was such a mess.
I was talking to John Grayson this week, who's mm-hmm. I'm on his show Overnight America. It's a syndicated radio show that's on in the middle of the night, but we record on Thursday afternoons. And we were talking about.
I'm sure you have like a devoted long haul trucker following, maybe, or something, you know.
But he was asking me if I had heard of the thing where people are actually protesting that the film is called Aloha.
I saw that, and I'm not entirely clear why that's a thing.
Him bringing it up was the first I'd heard of it, and I thought, and when he brought it up to me, I said, I don't get that, because I don't, first of all, I did not know that Aloha was tied to anything spiritual or historical, that I just assumed it was just the word for hello and goodbye.
Yeah, I did read the thing about how it's like the front of me is greeting the front of you or something. Yeah, and it was all news to me. I did not know this stuff.
And it seemed odd to me upon first discussion that anyone could claim ownership of a word, especially since the Hawaiian tourism industry has sort of made it into the thing that you think of first when you think of Hawaii.
Nobody complained when there was a Debbie Reynolds show on ABC called Aloha Paradise.
Well, that's because the people who might complain probably didn't have a media outlet to complain with.
This is
like,
true.
Now we do. Yes. Now you've got Twitter and Facebook and you can start a thing and make people listen to you. And that's great. That's why the internet is amazing. And after I'd said, you know, well, I don't get it, and I don't understand it, and I don't see how you can say everyone has to stop saying aloha now, but if anyone would like to tell me how wrong I am, I'm totally open to being told how wrong I am. But since that radio discussion, I have gone and read a little more about it, and it makes more sense to me now. I think that's a horse that has run out of the barn and is never coming back, yes. But it does make sense. And
so what does it boil down to then?
It's like a sacred word, you know, that has been sort of co-opted and used and, you know.
It's on keychains.
It's on keychains. You know, and so.
Apparently, yeah. it was called Hawaii for a long time.
Right.
In fact, I think in one of the many leaked Sony emails about this movie, Amy Pascal mentioned that she liked that title better.
Yeah.
Although Hawaii, like I said, is the name of the movie that George Royal made based on the James Michener novel. Yes. Not that anybody but me remembers that, but it's, you know, it's even more generic in terms of what this movie is about. You know,
they do nod to, you know, Hawaiian concerns about the domination of the state.
I did not know there was a Hawaiian sovereignty movement. That's the one thing I learned in this movie.
If anything, I did learn that from this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a pain. There are a couple sweet moments. The dance between Emma Stone and Bill Murray I thought was kind of adorable.
Yeah, but it
didn't mean anything.
And it's not as shot as well as it could have been when you're... Because it gears you up to expect, oh, this is going to be a moment, you know?
That folk song where they all join in and she's singing on the guitar with everybody.
Oh,
that was very sweet.
That was nice. I like the final exchange between...
John Krasinski and
Bradley
funny.
Cooper.
It went on a little too long, but it was funny.
That's like one of the highlights of the film. But yeah, this thing is just... And who knows? Maybe in 2 years we'll get this director's cut Blu-ray, and
it all makes sense. Yeah. And it doesn't feel terrible.
It's like, oh, that's what this was all about.
It doesn't feel tone deaf. Maybe another edit would make it better. I don't know.
I had not been following the Sony hack story enough to know all of the stuff that had been going on about this movie. So much had been going on. In fact, that the press screening that David and I did, Cameron Crowe came out at the beginning. To remind us that despite all the things we might have heard about this film, that it was always intended to be a love letter to Hawaii.
Yeah, he said that twice.
You know, I was like, okay, Cameron Crowe. But then I went back later, and apparently, Amy Pascal was not down with this movie. She thought it was just like a mess and that needed all this work, and there were things about it that didn't make sense, and there were several test screenings, and it got to the point where apparently she just sort of deemed it unfixable.
Right.
And
I wish he had come out after the movie was over. I wish they had barred everyone from leaving.
Right.
Like, held us at the door and forced us all to go back to sit down. And then he came out and was like, hey, everybody! What'd you think of my movie?
What'd you think of my movie?
So that I could have yelled from the back, boo!
It stinks.
Shut up, Cameron Crowe. That would have been
great. Off the stage. Yeah. So, but I didn't know any of that stuff really going in, and so now that I hear it later, I'm like, oh well, you know, wonder this doesn't the movie does look like it suffered the death of a thousand paper cuts because there's this at the very beginning, he's sort of narrating his life up to that point, and you're like, wait, you went to Afghanistan, but then now you're with Bill Murray, and then you weren't, and now you are again, and wait, what?
Yeah,
huh?
yeah.
You know, so it's
you don't get their relationship at all. No. Just other than Bradley Cooper saying to him something like, you left me for dead. Or
yeah, you left me in Kabul or something. This movie. A much more pleasing...
is Blue Hawaii.
Well, yeah, definitely. Or Paradise Hawaiian Style, which don't ask me which is which.
Girls, girls, girls. All of them. Much better.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of like the worst Elvis movie. Of Habit or Charo.
But if there's anyone out there listening who can explain the Aloha thing even better to me than the internet articles
I've read, send us an email.
I would love to know more because I still don't fully understand it.
Yeah, we just thought it was a word and apparently it's
a
secret word.
If some folks are upset, they've got a reason. Sure. I mean, there's always a reason because, you know, like I said, up until recently, people who did have a grievance didn't have a, you know, an internet to talk about it on, and now we do.
Allowed a bullhorn. So yeah, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com if you
need
to
know things.
A much more pleasurable experience will be a visit to rogerandchris.com.
That's correct.
RogerandChris.
Maybe you don't know what that is.
.com.
We've talked about them for 3 weeks now. They have furniture to sell you.
They do. Beautiful, beautiful furniture.
Beautiful furniture, handmade furniture.
In
the United States. Really sturdy. I think I mentioned in the very first spot that you can sex on this furniture all day and all night. Especially with a lot of people.
I don't know that there have been actual studies for
you
this.
Won't break it. I'm just guessing.
Okay.
They guarantee sturdy furniture, well-made, handcrafted
all
in
right,
America.
Let's not overpromise.
Which means you can get down.
Ideally, yes. Sturdy furniture
I'll
will deliver.
I'll talk to Chris this week and confirm.
Mm-hmm.
You know. For all we know, they have farmed out.
I don't know what their focus group
for all
situation
we know,
is.
They have focus grouped, you know, the lifestyle kind of, you know, stress testing. The 2001 documentary, The Lifestyle about Orange County swingers. Please go find that film and watch it. Your life will never be the same after you've seen that movie. Anyway.
In the meantime, however.
This is also, in addition to being sturdy enough to bone on.
Yes.
This is a very attractive furniture.
Yes.
It's classic.
Beautifully designed.
Also, it can be not so classic. Like, they have this electric blue, Chesterfield leather sofa. You can design it yourself. I mean, you can't design it. They designed it. But you can pick your own fabrics and colors and stuff.
They are the home of the unboring home.
Yes. And they're our sponsor. And we think they're great. And the next couch we buy is going to be from them.
No question.
And the next lamp we get is going to be from them, too. I've mentioned this. I know I'm boring everybody with this lamp, but I'm totally buying this
lamp. All right.
And you can buy a lamp from them, too, and get 20% off.
Of any lighting purchase, it's a lamp or a sconce
or
whatever.
Not a couch, but a lighting purchase.
Using the discount code KNIFE.
KNIFE. That's us.
Listener Chris has already done so and is thrilled to death.
I know. He told me this week. He's like, I bought a lamp. And I got my discount.
That's right. So be like Chris. Get yourself a lamp and save some money.
This is grown-up furniture for grown-ups.
That's right. RogerandChris.com. RogerandChris. You know Roger from the television and now from his web series.
Roger Hazard. It's Roger Hazard from whatever that show was that he was on.
Sell This House?
Something This House. He's from Something This House.
Yes.
We need to have our notes in front
of
us.
We probably should. But he was on that house show.
He was on that show about the houses.
Yes.
The house would be garbage, mm-hmm. and he would come in and be like, your house is garbage. I'm going to fix it for you. Here's how I'm going to fix it. Bang, bang, bang. magic, waving the hands like on the Charlie Brown Christmas. And then,
boom.
And then, boom, your house is a Christmas tree.
Then you can sell that thing.
You can sell it. That's how he got famous.
With his Charlie Brown Christmas hands.
He was on Something This House.
Now he's on the web series Roger That.
Yes. And the website, again, is Roger and Chris. K. No, not a K. C-H-R-I-S. RogerandChris.com. Go to them.
Yes. And tell them we sent you.
Do not go to San Andreas.
Oh, we disagree on this. You
tell everyone about this film.
Okay.
Then I'll tell them why it's garbage.
All right. Now, you're used to your disaster movies having an ensemble cast. You know, that's when you think of the old Irwin Allen movies or movies like Earthquake or whatever, you know, there was always that row of boxes at the bottom of the poster with all the stars, and it was a mix of, you know, Academy Award winners and young up-and-comers and old over-the-hillers. Not so much in San Andreas. It is pretty much about Dwayne Johnson and his immediate family and what happens when the entire San Andreas Fault decides to do the thing it's been threatening to do for the last century and basically destroy Los Angeles and San Francisco. Yeah. While very concerned seismologist Paul Giamatti looks on in horror and tries to explain to TV reporter Archie Punjabi why everyone should get under furniture and do it right now. Dwayne Johnson plays a fire and rescue guy, and even though he is supposed to be flying his helicopter over to the Hoover Dam to help out with casualties, he instead decides to commandeer the vehicle to save his wife, played by Carla Gugino, who's in L.A., and his daughter, played by Alexander Daddario, who is in San Francisco. And while this rescue is taking place, massive, massive amounts of destruction are going on all around him, with skyscrapers going roof over tea kettle and giant tidal wave tsunamis being formed in the San Francisco Bay. This movie's dumb.
Yeah.
But there's lots of destruction, and I found myself entertained. It is kind of the dopey version of White House Down in terms of my sort of endless engagement and dopey entertainment value. You know, it's funny. I liked the movie. The Andrew Barker at Variety did not like it so much, but we both referenced Lizard Brain in terms of what this movie is aiming directly at. It will totally circumvent your sort of reason cells and just go right for things falling. So yeah, it's a dopey movie, but I had a good time.
Guess what? I didn't have
a good time.
That is correct. I enjoy destruction. I enjoy death. I like destruction and death. Here are the parts of this film that I liked. The parts where there were destruction. The parts where there was destruction and death.
Where random debris would crush a random extra?
Yeah. I like what they did to the extras. They dispatched those extras with a kind of wildness that I was very happy about. This happened half a dozen times. Big chunk of something would fall on somebody.
Right.
Somebody goes down a sinkhole. Or my favorite was the guy on fire who was all just like, like running around.
Stop, drop, and roll, everyone.
But they make that digital destruction cartooning stuff happen from start to finish. And that's fine. I like watching that. It looks okay. Not amazing. Not crappy.
Never took me out of it.
But not distinctive enough to make me forget that I had seen similar destruction in 2012 or The Day After Tomorrow.
Sure.
So that wasn't enough to sustain my interest. Mm. In order for my interest to be sustained in a disaster movie, I need, you know, the destruction and the death, but I also need characters that keep me engaged. They can't just be, you know, blow up creatures to get popped off every once in a while, you know. We have a problem in the world of mainstream movie making where no one can die.
Granted.
Nobody can die. No one who is well known in the movie is allowed to die. Unless it is already set up in advance that that is a bad person.
Right.
So, I'm going to give you spoilers that are no spoilers. There are 1.5 people in this film who are bad.
Mm-hmm.
One of them you think is maybe halfway good, but then he turns out to be bad. He dies. Then you have his sister,
who's a total B.
Well, she's not on screen enough to be a total B. She's on screen enough for you to think, well, she's being a little rude to Carla Gugino.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know exactly what her deal is, other than that she's kind of bristly, you know. Yeah. This person is played by Kylie Minogue.
Yes.
One of my favorite people on Earth.
Is there a Nicaraguan drag queen named Kylie Minogue, do we think?
I don't know. Maybe.
There should be. If there isn't, there should be.
You love to invent the drag names for others.
Well, I'm not going to use them. It's my gift to the world.
She's on screen. If you're a Kylie obsessive, I took our friend Mark,
mm-hmm.
who is a Kylie Minogue maniac. Like, he flies to other countries to see her perform live.
Other continents.
Like, I'm a big fan. But he is fanatical.
Yeah.
He'll fly to Australia to see her perform.
Right.
He's flown to Sweden to see her perform. He's flown to Scotland to see her. You know, like, he'll go anywhere to
Eastern Europe.
Yeah, he'll go anywhere to see Kylie Minogue perform. Which is kind of what you have to do most of the time, because she doesn't often perform in the United States.
Exactly.
She's gone in 60 seconds.
Did he just spend the rest of the movie kind of going,
kind of.
Why am I here?
Yeah, he was like, oh, is that it? When
I told you in advance.
She's running toward, the earthquake is happening, and she's running toward a door, and she actually yells, get out of my way, which is a song on one of her albums.
Right.
And he turns to me and he goes, did she just say get out of my way? And I was like, yes.
I did not catch that.
And then she falls off a roof.
Yes. Again, Andrew Barker of Variety pointed out that it was her second film after Holy Motors, in which she leaves the film by falling off a roof and dying.
So, you know, but no one else gets to die.
No.
And so here's where it differs from classic 70s Irwin Allen produced disaster films, such as The Towering Inferno and my all-time favorite, The Poseidon Adventure. In those movies, characters died.
Yes.
Famous actors playing characters that you liked and that you were rooting for would bite it routinely.
It was the
70s. In the beginning, in the middle, at the end. Like, at the end of The Poseidon Adventure, just when you think this film has 5 minutes left to go, just when you think that they're about to all make it to safety, bang, bang, two more people die. And it's this immense just crescendo of grief and emotion and sacrifice. And you get to have the catharsis in your theater seat with candy of having experienced loss.
Yes. No, I agree.
Which doesn't make you happy, but it makes you feel.
Yes.
And now we have franchise building concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have test audiences that routinely say things like, I didn't like it when that person died. I don't like it when people die. It makes me feel bad.
No, well, I know.
F you, you idiot. We now make movies for the stupidest people that the United States can produce.
Well, I think we always did. I think it was just that our stupidest people got stupider.
That's what I mean. Even stupider than before.
Than they used to be.
Yeah.
No, I agree. That's the thing that drives me bananas, especially.
So this movie can eat a bag of D's.
Well, Yeah.
It's boring. It's very boring.
I was not bored. Even though I share your annoyance that they don't kill off major characters anymore, but I was not bored. And that's why I had a good time. No, that's the thing that always drives me crazy in like those Tom Cruise movies where it seems like he's going to sacrifice himself, you know, and then it turns out, nope, there's a catch, you know, so
Right.
he's not gonna die after all. It's like,
Yeah.
anyway, yeah, so San Andreas, I had fun, David Dodd, fine. Then I saw Gemma Bovary, which is was it last week or 2 weeks ago? I made Tamara Drew my DVD pick of the week.
Not long ago.
Yeah, so that was based on a graphic novel by a woman named Posy Simmonds. It originally ran in the Guardian newspaper in London, in England. And Tamara Drew was sort of a modern day spin on Far From the Madding Crowd. The lead character is a woman who inherits land up in Hardy Country, basically, and finds herself the attention, the you know the with the attentions of three different men. And Gemma Bovary is, as you might guess from the title, a sort of a similar play on Flaubert's Madame Bovary. It's about again a British couple who move into a house in Normandy, and she is sort of bored and restless and unhappy in her marriage, and has some affairs, and things go spiraling out of control.
Yeah.
What I found really interesting about this
Madame
movie.
Bovary is a jerk, by the way.
Well, Gemma Bovary is not, though,
Yeah.
I think. And what I thought was kind of cool about the movie is that so much of the story is dictated by the men around her, specifically the local baker, who's sort of the narrator and through whose eyes we see most of this story. He, in fact, filches her diary, and so like even her inner thoughts are processed through him.
Right.
He's played by Fabrice Luchini, who was in.
I don't know
Did
him.
you see François Ozon's In the House?
In the house.
In the House. He was the lead in that.
No, I didn't.
He's been in several Ozon movies. He was in a bunch of Eric Rohmer movies.
Oh,
He's
okay.
like, you know, he's a veteran. And
I'd
really,
probably recognize his
if you
face.
saw him, yeah, he's really funny. And
Sorry,
he's,
I'm yawning. It's that time of the
oh, God,
afternoon.
you're doing it again.
It's afternoon. It's
Does
Sunday
it?
afternoon.
You know what else it is?
I
Rude.
don't know.
Anyway. So the much of the movie is about sort of his obsession with her and his sort of process, you know, his view of everything that she's doing.
Right.
And Gemma Arterton, who played Tamara Drew, is playing Gemma Bovary. So it's, you know, it's weird. It's a different filmmaker, different writer, but it's the same actors and the same source material. So you don't usually get that carrying over from movie to movie. I was charmed by this. It's not as good as Tamara Drew, but it's kind of a
I
quirkily.
didn't like Tamara
I know
Drew
you didn't, and you're
either.
wrong.
No.
This one, you know, it has a kind of a quirky appeal to it, and it's Luchini and Arterton are fun to watch together. And it's not; it has its flaws. It's directed by Anne Fontaine, who made the really, really awful Adore.
Never saw it.
Oh man, that movie! That's the one that we laughed off the screen at Sundance.
What else has
And
she made?
she's most famous for Coco Before Chanel, which I was also not a big fan of.
I didn't like that either.
But I like this one. You know, I it has a charm to it, and I sort of like the idea of maybe Madame Bovary is less of a jerk if she got to tell her own story, you know, and didn't have some dude telling you what she's up to and why. So yeah, if it's around you, you might check it out. It's charming, and I like Gemma Arterton in these movies way more than anything else I usually see her in.
Well, she's not usually given much to do. They put her in
Yeah.
big movies and then don't give her a character to work.
Exactly. Holly, as far as Hollywood's concerned, she's pretty, you know, but
Right.
these movies have to give her a little more depth to play. What's your DVD pick this week?
Monica Mana again.
Yes.
I have already made this my DVD pick once before when it came out on DVD, but I am making it my DVD pick again because of the Nepal earthquake. And here's the story. I remember hearing about the earthquake and thinking, of course, the only tie that I have to Nepal is
The cast of
my
Monica Mana.
great affection for the film Monica Mana, which is a documentary about people taking cable car rides up to the top of a mountain where there is a shrine. And it's a beautiful, tranquil, hypnotic documentary. And my first thought was, oh no, what happened to the Monokamana people? Like, are they alive? Because thousands and thousands of people have died in that Nepalese earthquake. And I would Google it every few days, like, Monokamana earthquake. And just try, and then there was like a little piece about the actual temple and the damage that it sustained. And, but not about the people, not about the people in that film, you know?
Right, right.
Well, finally, news.
Yes.
They all survived.
Our listener, Ellen, alerted us to a GoFundMe page that one of the directors of the film started to benefit the
people,
the villagers. Yeah.
They're all basically living in tents.
Right.
I cannot have the little old ice cream lady living in a tent.
No.
This cannot be. They want to raise $10,000. We're going to put the link up on
the Linoleum Knife Facebook, and I'll tweet it too.
Yeah. And or you can go to my Facebook wall, D. Leland White. I've can scroll down a little bit because it's on there. Yeah, this is a big deal. Like, these folks have no homes anymore. And you can't live in a tent.
No.
Not for long anyway. And have a life.
Right.
So they're raising money to get these folks housing again.
And according to the page, the first $2,000 raised has already been sent over, and they've already begun cutting bamboo to build folks new houses. So that's good. But yeah, they're not anywhere near their goal yet. So we'll post the link on how you can help the Monokamana survivors.
So throw $5 at this if that's all you got, or $2 if that's all you got, or more if you're rich.
They would appreciate it.
And watch
this movie.
Watch this movie because it's so incredible and so beautiful. And yeah, I love it.
My DVD pick this week is Jupiter Ascending, the Wachowskis' latest joint. A very underrated movie, I think. I had a blast watching it.
Compared to a lot of other garbage I've seen this year, it's looking a lot better all the time.
It's certainly not, you know, it does not suffer from a surfeit of ideas. There's a lot happening in this thing. And it takes some big crazy choices, you know.
Surfeit is your vocabulary word of the week.
Listener. I'm more inclined to believe Channing Tatum as half wolf than I am
Emma Stone
is half Asian, Pacific Islander. And I am the one critical blurb on the DVD. That's how desperate they were for a good review. They turned to me. So anyway, yeah, I think it's a fun movie. If you missed it, if you heard bad things about it, then give it a shot. You never know. And if you have a funky 3D Blu-ray player and TV set up,
can you watch it?
You can indeed. Yeah, there's a lot of great like skateboard shoe flying sequences around Chicago.
Yes.
And Academy Award winner Eddie Redmayne vamping it up madly as the Prince of Outer Space.
His full cape.
Wearing a lot of outfits from
and
the closet.
Jewels.
Of Dame Shirley Bassey.
We have a gang of letters.
We do.
How many minutes have we been on?
We're only 48, so we can take some letter time.
A few minutes to get some letters. Hello, Alonzo and Dave. In recent weeks, I have been reviewing old top 10 lists that I've made and seeing how the films hold up. Seeing how some do and others don't, I came up with a revised list of my favorite films of the 2000s.
Okay.
Now, advising the audience, this is the second of two lists that have been submitted to us that are more than 10 items long.
Oh, stop it, people.
Hang on. No. We talked about this last week. This was the one that we did not read last week.
Oh, okay.
Because we were reading Matt Severson's mega list.
Yes. Yeah. Severson Alexander Platt.
This one is only 15.
Okay.
But that is still...
This is the last one.
This is the last one. Anybody who sends us more than a top 10, we're going to send it back to you, and we're going to say...
Do-over.
Do-over. Exactly.
Or we'll just read the top 10.
And maybe if I'm feeling it, I might send it back to you and use my favorite line of dialogue from Mad Max Fury Road when Immortan Joe yells, "Mediocre!"
Oh, there's mediocrity.
No.
Mediocre?
Mediocre!
Mediocre!
When Nux fails.
Gets caught up in the thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's hilarious.
It's the best part of the movie. All right, here's the list. Now You Shall Be Knifed. Dreamgirls.
Okay.
I'm into it.
Sure.
I still like Dreamgirls.
I got no beef with Dreamgirls.
There's been a backlash against Dreamgirls. I'm into it.
Dreamgirls has a lot going on.
That is a straight up gay movie. And I like it.
It has a Beyonce fashion montage that calls out to Mahogany.
Yes.
Enough said.
It's got Jennifer Hudson yelling.
Yep.
She yells the heck out of that song.
Mm-hmm.
She's great.
Oscar winner.
Yeah. Little Children. Hate that movie. No. Sucks.
No.
Completely overwrought, weird.
It has its... I liked What's-His-Face's performance, Jackie Earle Haley. He was creepy and interesting. And, you know, we can't completely deny the appeal of, you know, Patrick Wilson dorsal nudity. But that's it.
Say it. Say how much you liked his butt.
He's flexing.
Before Sunset.
Yeah.
The Royal Tenenbaums.
Okay.
Match Point.
All right.
No, I'm really into Match Point.
I liked it, yeah. It's the best of Woody Allen trying to be Patricia Highsmith.
In the bedroom.
Sure.
Do it.
Everything!
Ratatouille.
Okay.
Which I think is great. The Aviator, which I think we are split on.
Into it. I'm not so much a fan.
All right. Sideways.
Yeah.
There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Far From Heaven.
Yeah.
Chicago.
I think we're split on that one. I like it and you're not so
I'm
much
not
a
so
fan.
I'm not so hot on Chicago.
Okay.
Even though it's from the same...
writer as Dreamgirls.
Yes. A Man We Know.
Mm.
But it's not his fault.
No. I think it works.
A Serious Man.
Yeah.
I love A Serious Man.
Oh, totally, yeah.
No Country for Old Men, which I love even more.
Okay, I like it.
And Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're 90-whatever percent knife, 95%.
It's a list 15, of 15.
How to do the math on 15. You're 95% knife. Thank you, Michael.
Actually, it'd be more like 9, never mind. It's complicated.
This is from Reese. No, this is from Clint.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Hello, Dave White and Alonzo.
Hello.
Who has no last name?
Apparently.
I didn't take your advice. Well,
first mistake.
How do you feel about that now? Non-advice taken, Clint.
Hope you're sorry.
And I ended up seeing Paul Blart, too.
Oh, well, nah, that's what you get.
I'm sorry, I have actually no sympathy.
None.
Because not only did we advise you against this.
The rest of the world.
The entire rest of the film reviewing planet advised you against this.
Didn't have
well.
Like one fresh review on Rotten Tomatoes?
Maybe. Because my showing of Mad Max was sold out. Well, you know what you do? When you're showing a Mad Max is sold out.
You buy a ticket to the next one, and then you...
You go home. You go home. You stop and get a pie along the way. You eat your feelings. You don't go see Paul Blart 2.
Or, you know, maybe you order your Mad Max tickets in advance on the internet.
Yeah.
The way other people do.
Right.
Which is why you got locked out.
Right.
So many lessons to be learned here.
I was the only person in the theater at the AMC North Park 15 in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, wow, now. Okay, now, wait a minute.
I brought my mom there to see Obsessed.
You're on... I saw The Big Wedding there with David Zeve. You're at a 15-screen multiplex.
Yeah.
And Mad Max is sold out.
What else?
And you're
there?
Telling me that there are the other 13 movies weren't better than Paul Blart 2. Even if it meant seeing something again.
Hang on. I'm pulling up the AMC North Park 15 schedule right now.
Okay, good.
Here we go.
What do we got?
Okay, I'm going to assume that he's not talking about anything that opened this week. So San Andreas
is out.
Of course,
yes, right.
He could have seen Tomorrowland.
Depending.
He could have seen Poltergeist.
Again, depending on when he went.
He could have seen Pitch Perfect 2.
Yes, totally.
Which I didn't like.
But it's better than Paul Blart 2.
He could have seen Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yes.
He could have seen Far From the Madding Crowd.
Mm-hmm.
He could have seen The Age of Adeline.
I'll take it over Paul Blart 2.
Sure. Age of Adeline? Way better than Paul Blart 2. Far From the Madding Crowd? Way better than Paul Blart 2. Avengers? Way better than Paul Blart 2.
Pitch Perfect 2, way better than Paul Blart 2.
Pitch Perfect 2 is way better than Paul Blart 2, and I didn't even like Pitch Perfect
2.
See,
there you go. That's what I'm saying.
Poltergeist is the same quality as Paul Blart 2. Do not see Poltergeist. It sucks.
Well, it does suck, and yet it
what
is still
I'm
better
saying
than Paul
here,
Blart 2.
Clint, you had a chance.
Yeah, these excuses are feeble.
Furthermore, you were in a mall, and I've been in that mall a million times.
You could have...
I used to live in that city, and I've been to North Park Mall a jillion-ass times.
You could have bought a ticket to the next Mad Max, and then you could have gone to the food court and had, like, a Sonic chili cheese dog with some tater tots,
yes.
And then shopped at Barney's Co-op for
they
what
got
was on
Chick,
sale.
They got a Chick-fil-A in that food court.
Do not be endorsing Chick-fil-A.
Did I endorse Chick-fil-A? I'm just saying, they got one.
No.
They got spice. They got the spicy
you
number
are,
three.
You're getting real close.
They got the spicy number three there.
You know, there's
look, they may be awful, but it does not diminish the taste of the spicy
you,
number three.
You could do some mall walking while waiting for
they
that
got
next
a rock,
show to
they
start.
They got a Rockport store there for all your mall walking needs.
That's right. You could have gone and looked at the Andy Warhols.
I think they have a Cinnabon.
I think they do.
In there. They did at one point.
Don't they still have the Andy Warhols up there, don't they?
I don't remember.
Remember, for years, they had those Warhols.
Yeah,
prints.
Yeah, yeah. They may still have
them. I think they still have them. There's so much.
They've got the fountain from Dr. T and the Women that Farrah Fawcett frolicked
right?
through.
They've got those weird statues of all the people.
The guys
hammering
things.
Shoes or whatever.
They used to have a Luby's.
Mm. They used to have, what was that great store where we bought the...
Luby's Cafeteria is a thing.
In Texas.
A beautiful, beautiful thing. they used to be in that mall.
What was that store where we bought the Gigantor robot?
Oh, that's long gone.
I know. Well, that was they used to have that too.
It was like a Japanese toy store.
Yeah,
it had vintage stuff.
So
in it.
Great.
That was a great place.
Anyway, no excuse for your Paul Blart 2. So you deserved the suffering you endured.
Here's the rest of the letter.
Okay,
this
sorry.
Is only the first sentence
sorry,
of the letter.
We're just mad.
I was the.
We're not mad. We're disappointed.
We're mad
and mad.
We're mad at you. You've upset us very much. You to think about what you've done.
You put money into the coffers of Paul Blart, too,
yeah.
Which we had to do for work.
I was the only person in the theater at the AMC North Park 15 mm-hmm. in Dallas, Texas. And to be fair, it is not a bad movie. Oh, no!
Oh, no! That's Stockholm Syndrome talking.
It is just terribly unfunny. Well, that's the definition of bad movie!
Yeah. What else were you there for? The musical numbers?
I was hoping, waiting, praying to laugh at one thing in this movie, but it didn't happen. I was rooting for the movie to be funny once because the actress who played Paul Blart's daughter was the only person really trying, and I felt bad for her. The worst movie I've ever seen was Ballistic X vs. Sever, and to this day it is the only movie I've walked out of. In comparison, Paul Blart 2 wasn't that terrible. Well, you know what? I could have a paper cut on my eyeball.
And it would be better than one on my tongue.
And it would be better than one on my tongue. Thank you.
No, worse than one on my tongue.
I don't know.
I'd rather have one on my tongue than my eyeball. You've had one on your eyeball. You should
know
this.
Oh, boy. That was a day. Ugh. That happened in the 90s.
Yes.
Don't be nostalgic for the 90s. Because that happened to me in the 90s, and that makes the entire decade
moot.
Horrible. I ended up seeing Mad Max a few days later. It was a lot of stuff I didn't completely understand, but I loved it. Saw Tomorrowland. It was a mess. There were a lot of setups that didn't pay off in the end. They mentioned the exam that Casey Newton took and scored a 73, but there was no real explanation what the exam meant. Also, spoiler. Were the kids at the end of the movie that were recruiting new people for Tomorrowland robots like Athena? I would assume yes, but it is not clear. This movie reminds me of Prometheus and the TV show Lost, because there were a lot of unexpected moments. Then I saw that Damon Lindelof was a co-writer of Tomorrowland, who co-wrote Prometheus and Lost, and the non-explanations made sense. I noticed that there was an acting coach listed in the credits. Not sure why, the actor who plays the younger brother of Casey didn't take advantage of these services. He is also horrible in the TV show Extant. Enough of my rantings. Love the podcast. We're very happy that you love the podcast.
Yes. But sin no more.
We don't know how we feel about you, though, Clint.
You let us down.
You really wronged us.
You let us all down.
And I would like...
We were rooting for you!
I would like to know what you're going to do to make it up to us. You have some time to think about this.
Maybe help the Monica Mana people.
Yeah. Give some money to the Monica Mana people. Give the money that you gave to Paul Blart 2 to the Monica Mana Building Fund. That is... Yes.
Justice.
I've just decided. All right. This is from a different Michael.
Mm.
Dear Alonzo and Dave, I had a lot of linoleum knife-related intersections this past week that I thought I would share with you guys. Lots of personal data and probably not of interest for the on-air mailbag.
Too late.
Too late. We're reading it anyway. Number one, see attached pic. This is me on the right and Baltimore Tim Burger Cookies.
Tim G.
Yeah, Tim G. He's on the left at a cookout in West Virginia this weekend. Whoa. Tim is the awesome queer big brother I never had and one of my favorite people. I wore my linoleum shirt for him since he introduced me to the podcast last year.
Hey now.
We actually discussed you guys while eating
burgers, cookies. Oh, man. So good. So good.
Try not to get too aroused when you think about that. It's too late.
Oh.
But F yeah, it was as hot as it sounds. The shirt caused some conversation and broke the ice with Danny M., a guy I've seen around but have never spoken with. Turns out, he knows Dave personally.
Oh.
He is also a fan of the podcast. We discussed how listening to it is like being invited to a casual party with your most hilarious friends.
Oh.
Which ones?
We're it, I guess.
It's sad if we're your most hilarious friends.
Get out more.
We discussed Dave's book. I wrote a book once, by the way.
Yes.
In 2006. It was called Exile in Guyville. Yeah, I stole that title from Liz Fair, who talked to me about it once on Twitter. She said to me, if it's called Exile in Guyville, it must be good. And I tweeted back to her and I said, don't get too excited.
Oh, you.
Calm down, Liz Fair.
Always so modest.
Settle down, Liz Fair. Most interestingly, I ended up chatting on... I ended up chatting with a person from Los Angeles who was in town visiting his family. You're right, this letter is not interesting enough.
Oh, well, you've started now. You can't just walk away in the middle.
He met our Poseidon adventure. I'm going to condense it.
Ah.
He met our Poseidon adventure
co-host.
Guest expert co-host for the Poseidon adventure.
Extra episode.
Extra episode that is $1.99 yes. on PayPal.
From linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Brian Boskin.
Ah.
Yeah.
He gets around that, Brian.
Everyone we know is now meeting everyone else we know. I need more burgers, cookies. The end.
And I hope you're all on the Linoleum Knife group page hanging out together. And talking about movies and stuff.
Okay, this is from Mauro.
Okay.
Hello, guys. Greetings from Buenos Aires.
Whoa.
Yeah. Argentina. That's where that is.
Yes.
Yep.
Not Indiana.
I was listening to your podcast about the movie The Film Critic.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the movie is The Film Critic. You right. talked about it, what, last week?
El Critico.
Yeah. And wanted to confirm that, yes, we do serve donuts at the screenings.
We are doing it all wrong in this country.
Yeah. Also, which are the films you watched that were so bad it ended up being laughable? Mine are Ghost Rider, which I loved. Punisher Warzone, which is incredible. So incredible that Patton Oswalt has made, like, has given it like a burst of popularity, I think.
Really?
Yeah, he's talked about it before, too.
Bibbs is a big fan, I know.
It's flabbergastingly good. It is so great. But he thinks it's so bad it was funny. I just think it was so great that I was laughing.
With glee.
With glee, yeah. The Happening, yeah, that's so bad it's funny.
Taken Outrun 2, the Wind.
Taken 2, I was just kind of bored with.
Yeah, I was frustrated with Taken 2. But, you know, with a couple of cocktails and the right friends, Taken 2 I could see might be.
And the 2008, The Wicker Man.
Not the bees!
Thanks. Love the podcast. I like that someone in Argentina is listening to us.
That is very exciting.
I want to be a film critic in Argentina.
To get donuts. That's,
they're giving out donuts there, those screenings.
Again, any American publicists who are listening, take a page from our amigos south of the equator.
All right, here's the last one I'm going to read.
Okay.
We got a bunch of them in this.
Yes. Did you, I hope you're the letter about structure, because we did get another.
Oh, one. Is this another structure letter?
I don't know. You have this several.
We'll get to them later.
Okay. Apparently, our listeners can't talk enough about structure. The clothing store, not the concept.
Hi, Dave and Alonzo. Long-time listener, first-time emailer. This is Frank.
Those are dogs.
Which dog is that?
I have no idea.
That doesn't sound like the downstairs dogs. No. That sounds like a dog on the sidewalk.
This is a neighboring dog.
Having a fit.
Goodness.
Yeah. Was happy to hear RogerAndChris.com sponsoring your show this week. That reminded me to email Chris about some furniture, which I just did, and I mentioned to him that I heard the ad today, Advertising Works.
Awesome.
Dave, could it possibly be the case that your voice was the one that said, you're all the way to the left of the dial on KTXT in 83 and 84? No.
Oh.
That was not me. I did not arrive at Texas Tech in Lubbock, Texas, until the spring semester of 1984.
Oh.
I had gone to two other schools before then. I bounced around like Sarah Palin.
Who was the person who said that? Do you remember?
I don't know. That was one of our spots.
It wasn't Pete Welton.
No. Fake it was radio some grown man with a, you're all the way to the left of the, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, right.
That announcery kind of voice.
Gary Owen sort of.
Yeah.
You were a KTXT.
Yes, he says, years. He continues with, I'm a Westerner. That he went to Lubbock High School.
Ah.
Class of 84, and vaguely remember your overnight show. Poor KTXT, rest in peace. That station is no more.
Oh.
Yeah, they killed it.
Yeah, WRVU, I think, at Vanderbilt, they sold it off, and now they're just on the internet or something.
I began KTXT, bless you. I was a DJ for The Outer Limits, beginning in, when was it, 87 or 88?
Have you ever seen a single episode of the television program whose title you stole?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was Liz Phair on that episode?
She was not.
Okay.
I was one of the rotating DJs on The Outer Limits in the late 80s, like 87, 88.
Okay.
And I did that for a while, and then I became the music director in my last year of college. So I was there. I was at Tech in 84, but I was late. I stayed at Texas Tech a long time.
Getting
and I didn't get involved in the radio station until later on.
I see.
That's such an exciting story about me as a college radio DJ.
Yes. Everyone in Lubbock is glued to this.
Here is his list.
Okay.
Ready for the Knife. Of his genuinely favorite movies that he will watch at the drop of a hat.
Okay.
Room with a View.
All right.
I really dig that movie.
I didn't love it in college, but after I went to Italy, I thought, I need to see this thing again and give it another chance. And I have not done so yet. But
What's Up, Doc?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you say it like that again, please?
Yes.
One more time?
No.
Do it again.
No.
Make it three.
No.
Please.
People can hit the rewind.
Please. No.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
The Battleship Potemkin.
All right.
Now Voyager.
Yeah.
Peyton Place.
Yeah.
Network.
Yeah.
It Happened One Night.
Mm-hmm.
Citizen Kane.
Sure.
Hannah and Her Sisters.
Yep.
Mildred Pierce.
Yeah.
Frank, Your 100% Knife.
Mm-hmm.
Then he says, keep up all the awesomeness.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. We will. I guess. Maybe we will.
All right. That's your last letter you want to do?
That's it. That's the end.
All right. Awesome. Well, we thank you for listening. And we will post the link on our Facebook and Twitter page of the Monica Mana GoFundMe to help the people who suffered in the Nepal earthquake. And speaking of the our friend Brian Boskin and the Poseidon Adventure, you can still get our commentary track for that film for $1.99. Just PayPal us at Linoleum Paper. Just PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. In addition to that episode, you can also purchase our commentary tracks for Two for the Road, Clue, Josie and the Pussycats, and The Apple. And, of course, we always urge you to check out our friends in the podcast universe. Go to christylemire.com. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Brett Easton Ellis podcast, the Schmoes Know, the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, the Canon, Malton on Movies, the Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, Film Spotting SVU, Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. As always, we thank Blue for our wonderful theme music. You can find out more about his lovely sounds at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes, where you can also leave us a review. The more reviews we get, the better placement we get on iTunes, so we appreciate it. We're not going to do a contest like the B-Movies podcast or like Film Spotting SVU did, which I admire their efforts to get more iTunes reviews. We're not going to do that. We trust you that you'll actually go and leave us a review out of the kindness of your heart.
The way you say it makes it sound like you think that we're better than them.
No, never.
You're sounding a little condescending.
I would never.
About those
I
guys.
I would never. I'm just saying our listeners don't need that kind of carrot and stick. They will. They might. They're going to go do it because it's the right thing to do.
Maybe we should bribe them.
Well, we'll see if we have to get to that. If that's what it comes to.
Maybe we already have had. Maybe we'd have double the listeners if we were more bribey.
Maybe. It's hard to say.
Maybe people would love us more if we bribed them better.
Don't let me down, listeners. I believe in you. Go leave us a review at iTunes, please. You can also stream the show for free at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com and leave us positive feedback there as well. Or you can stream the show on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. And while you're at Facebook, you can also join the Linoleum Knife group page where our listeners hang out. And subscribe to our YouTube channel where I've been posting some of our oldest episodes as YouTube files to give you another way to listen to them. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast, and again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to email us with questions, comments, your top 10 lists, and we mean your top 10 lists, not your 15, not your 20, not your 40, your top 10 lists. We will be back next week, and we hope you'll join us then.
Is there anything else to tell them about stuff?
Thank you to RogerAndChris.com for sponsoring the program.
Yes.
And we'll see you next time.
All right. Goodbye.